come on and listen. We got suggestions on the Bird Talk Radio. If your bird's misbehaving, we'll help you save it on the Bird Talk Radio. If your bird's getting rowdy, just call and say howdy on the Bird Talk Radio. We are birds of a feather. We'll stick together on the Bird Talk Radio.com.
You're listening to Bird Talk Radio on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Bird Talk Radio are the world leader in aviculture talk radio. Please enjoy this pre-recorded live segment with Suzanne Ort of Texas Natural Freeze Dry Products and our continuing series with Ginger Duplessis of gingersparrotrescue.org, operator of the Parrot Rescue 11 years, and expert force-free positive reinforcement pet bird trainer.
Elementary education as well as early childhood education, which early childhood education really comes into play when you're dealing with parrots who happen to remain toddlers for years and years and years and years. So it does help me to communicate and understand the behavior of my bird somewhat. We've been in business for the last year producing high-quality foods for parrots. I found there was kind of an area that was lacking in, you know, especially with chop, that a lot of people were kind of intimidated by making chop for their birds, or they didn't like the chop that was made. You put it in the freezer, then it thaws, it gets mushy, the bird turns its beak up at it. So I know we had that issue. So I thought probably other people might have the same problems getting their birds, you know, to eat healthy chops. So we had looked into purchasing a freeze dryer for our own use and decided to try running a batch of chop through it and see what happened. And that's kind of what started everything off. And our bird loves the freeze dried chop. She loves the crispness of it. It stays fresh for years and years and years. No refrigeration, no freezing, no thawing, no mush, nothing like that. So it's great for travel, emergencies, or if you have to leave your bird with a boarder or a pet sitter. It's great for the people that are taking care of your bird to continue giving a high-quality meal to them, even though you're not there.
Nice. And we could eat it too, right?
Oh, yeah. I have people that tell me they sprinkle it on salads and add it to, like, their coleslaw or things like that. So, and then we also have freeze-dried fruits, which are great snacks. You know, they're perfect for kids. There's no sugar added, no chemicals or preservatives, nothing added. It's just fresh fruit that we source from local growers. Chop it up, put it in the freeze dryer. It's good to go.
From way down Texas way.
Yes, we're lucky enough to have a big strawberry farm within about 4 miles from us, and so that's where our strawberries come from.
Nice. I just mentioned that because I've spent so much time in Texas, and I love Texas. So.
Oh, yeah.
I can hear the Texans cheering right now because I know how they are.
Yes, we're pretty proud of our home state.
Yes, and you should be. Justifiably so. Suzanne, what about this involvement with the AFA, the American Federation of Aviculture? Listening audience, I love Buddy Waske, like he was my own brother. He's on the board of directors at American Federation of Aviculture. You meet some people in your lifetime that just really have an effect on you, that impress you, that they have this loving effect on you. And Buddy Waske is one of those people. He's just a beautiful person. He loves birds. He has a lot of birds. He has that simple way about him that just gets to you. So what is your involvement with the AFA, Suzanne?
I'm a member. I signed up to be a member last year when I wanted to really kind of delve into parrot nutrition a little bit more and find out, you know, what was a good healthy diet for my bird. They have several online courses that you can take through AFA. It's just a really great organization for anybody that's interested in birds, has birds, or even chickens, wildlife, anything like that. They really look out for the welfare of all kinds of birds, waterfowl, you name it. They're there looking out for them. And I know they also provided a lot of disaster relief for birds after the hurricanes this year. But I do encourage anyone to sign up and join AFA because they are looking out for your interests as a bird owner. They're the ones that are fighting with legislation and trying to keep your rights as a bird owner.
Yes, and we're going to learn a lot more about that legislation on Bird Talk Live Online. We're going to be having listening audience. We're going to be having Buddy Waskey on again soon, and Lorella Despero, Gene Patterson, Tony Silva, and more people that are involved with legislation and everything that runs the gamut around pet bird ownership all over the world. Suzanne, I love what you're doing. I really love it. And I tell you what attracted me, what really interested me in having you on air was that you're a small business. You're doing something, obviously, to help birds and the bird community, and that's impressive. I know it's hard to develop a small business in this day and time. It's not easy. It takes a lot of resources and money sometimes. Can you talk a little bit more about that effort, about being a small business person? Why are you doing all this? Why do you get up every day and start chopping up food for birds?
Well, it's just, I love the end result when people send me videos of their bird eating our chop, or they send me pictures of their birds eating our chop, and they tell me, I've not been able to get this bird to eat a vegetable in his whole life. He just wants seeds, or, they can't get him to eat healthy. It just really makes everything worthwhile. Like I said, we were having a hard time getting our bird to eat the things that she needed to eat. She didn't like, she's not big on fresh vegetables, but once we freeze dry it, she enjoys the crispness of it. I just add a little bit of pomegranate to it and toss it around, and it stays fresh almost the whole day long. So it's a lot better choice for her. And I thought, if we're having this kind of trouble, then surely there are other bird owners that are having the same difficulty getting their birds to eat healthy food. And, they might be giving up and throwing up their hands and saying, well, whatever, just, I'll feed it seeds or whatever, they might give up. So we really wanted to come up with something that would make it easy for other bird owners to spoil their birds. I mean, my bird is rotten. She is totally spoiled rotten.
Spoiled rotten birds out there. That couldn't be.
So I saw a quote once on some little message board thing, and it said, everybody says that they have the best bird, and none of them are wrong. And I just love that because it's so true. We all have the very best bird. All of our birds are the best to us. So, we just want to share that with other people. And it really started off kind of, didn't start off as a business. It started off with what I like to call the great pomegranate apocalypse of 2016, when pomegranates went out of season, unbeknownst to me, because I didn't really realize what the pomegranate season was. All I knew was my bird requires 1/8 of a pomegranate every single day. If that doesn't happen, there's a tantrum,
kind of
they're screaming,
that?
They're throwing. Oh, Prissy is an African Senegal. So she's a small bird with a large attitude.
Of course.
She's a little thing with a great big attitude, and she loves her pomegranates more than anything in the world. And at one time we ran out of pomegranates and chaos ensued. It was terrible. So I'm driving around like a crazy person trying to order dried pomegranates for $40 a pound and, you know, all kinds of stuff to satisfy this bird. But and my husband had been looking into getting a freeze dryer, and so very wisely he told me, you know, if we had a freeze dryer, we could freeze dry all those pomegranates and you would never be out. So I started thinking about it and thought, yeah, you know, that's true. I could always have them, just add a little water. They're just like fresh again, and Prissy would always have them. So we did that and dried it out, and it was amazing, and it worked, and everything, you know, I was going great. And I started talking to my friends and telling them, wow, you know, we freeze dried some chop and we freeze dried some pomegranates and some bananas, and it worked really good. And Prissy really loves it because it's nice and crisp. And of course, then people were like, well, can you do some for me? And I can't tell anybody no. And we saw a little bit, you know, a business opportunity there to, you know, help ourselves out financially, and help other people to be able to give, you know, their birds the healthy food. And probably within about 2 months of taking orders for people, I quit my job teaching for 27 years, and my husband quit his job working, and we both are at home making bird food all day, every day.
I'm hearing you. And I know our listening audience is hearing you. I'm posting your link to your page, your Facebook page, on my Facebook page. And I'm guessing that the bird you're talking about, your Senegal, is the one in the header on the picture on your Facebook page. And I have to talk about a lot of different birds. Senegal parrot, African Senegal. Just a little more about the origin of the African Senegal and your bird. And it's obvious to me why you have Prissy Puffs now.
Yes, Prissy is our namesake for our Prissy Puffs, which are huge hits, and a lot of my customers do refer to them as a bird crack, because once their birds eat them, they have to have more and more, and I have people that buy them like 10 bags at a time because they're terrified of running out and having to be punished by their birds. But yes, Prissy is the namesake for our Prissy Puffs, and Prissy came to us very unexpectedly. I about 4 years ago, I didn't know what anything about parrots. I didn't, you know, of course I knew what a macaw looked like and a cockatoo, but I was not a bird person at all. And my husband went to work one morning. It was during the summer, and a little bit after 7 in the morning, he called me and he said, hey, you got to come down to my work. There's a baby parrot up here, and we have to, it looks really rough and it needs some food and water, and we got to find the owner. So I said, a baby parrot? And he was just like, no, just come down here right away and come and get this bird, because I've got to go, I've got work to do. So I drove over to the job site and saw this little small green and yellow bird was just perched on his shoulder, refusing to get off. So I took her home and gave her some water, and she was very tattered. She was very, very small, dehydrated, hungry, had obviously been lost for quite some time, and didn't even know, you know, what species, nothing. And it took us a day or so to even figure out what type of bird she was. And then once we did, we were able to put up postings and try to find her owners, which we were never able to find her owners. And she became part of our family and ultimately ended up, you know, changing our lives. So she definitely has a huge part of my heart and my husband's as well. So she's our baby. Yeah, we have the Prissy protocols in our household that are everything down to breakfast and all the way down to how Prissy likes to be put to bed at night. So, and they must be strictly adhered to.
You know, this is so beautiful. And the story is, it's not just a story, it's a reality, isn't it? When we talk about our feathered loved ones and why we get involved with these animals. And it's interesting to me, particularly Suzanne, how you got started doing this as a solution to provide food for your bird that was specific to your bird. I don't think there's a lot of pomegranate orchards in Texas.
No. I do have a tree in my yard now, though, so we're planning ahead.
Is it going to provide fruit?
It did. It bloomed kind of late last year, but we did get 8 pomegranates off of it and have since put in a small orchard down on our lower end of our property. We have, because we do sell peaches seasonally, we sell our Texas Fredericksburg peaches. Mm-hmm. So even when we can go to the orchards and pick up the peaches and stuff, we still, you know, are on the lookout to give our customers the very best that we can. So this year we actually planted a small orchard. We have 12 to 15 peach trees. I've kind of lost count because my husband keeps bringing them home and planting more every time I turn around. But so we have trees, we have plum trees. Oh, he can grow anything, so they'll be great. So we will be having freeze-dried plums, hopefully next year. Mm. So we have our peach trees, we have plum trees, we have mangoes, figs, grapefruit, lemon, and our pomegranates. And then also we're doing blackberry bushes, raspberries, loganberries, and berries this year. So hopefully, because we use fresh blueberries in our blueberry treats, and then we also do sell blueberries in our little shop. So we're hoping to get our own from that. And our line will be expanding over the next year. We're starting an apiary, so we have a couple of beehives started so that we can bee pollen, and then beeswax lotions and lip balms, things like that. So a lot of people are really using the bee pollen for medicinal uses, and so we want to make that available.
Thank you for tuning in to this segment of Bird Talk Live Online today. I'm your host, Mike Kiger, reminding businesses to visit our show website at birdtalkradio.com to discover how your business can benefit from our large listening audience. Go to birdtalkradio.com/advertise for more details.
Do you feel parrots and other birds deserve protection under the law? Dogs, cats, and horses have them, so why don't birds? Legislative Rights for Parrots is a nonprofit organization working with all states and also at the federal level, and we need your help. We can write the bills for you. We just need help reaching your state politicians to support our bills. We support parrot ownership. Yet with the number of bird flippers, non-reputable bird rescues, breeders, and pet stores that do not need to meet a minimum of care, we feel a standard of care must be outlined in law, just like for cats and dogs. If you're able to help us in your state, contact us at 1-833-HELP-LRP. That's 1-833-HELP-LRP or 833-435-7577. We do not ask for financial donations, just your time and passion to help these intelligent, social, beautiful creatures.
Well, and you can make it as dry or as, you know, moist as you want. I mean, it's just got a lot of benefits, and I really love it, and I use it here as a great time-saving
And you have a large flock. So chopping up all that food yourself every day, it'd take a lot of time out of your day and away from other, you know, priorities that you have. And listening audience, I'm talking to Ginger's Parrot Rescue. We're talking about the freeze-dried chop food from Texas Natural Freeze-Dried, Suzanne Ort's company. That's TexasNaturalFreezeDried.com. And her show, my interview with her, is on our podcast and streaming service. So if you go back to my Facebook page at facebook.com/Casey Bird Whisperer, you can find links to those shows. And I will be posting a link to this show, this conversation, that we'll upload to our podcast and streaming server tomorrow for your enjoyment and benefit. so that you can go back and enjoy all this awesome information from years of experience with Ginger, who is highly educated in behavior training. She has a lot of experience with the bird rescue that she's running, and a full service rescue that takes in birds, changes their behavior or adjusts it or modifies it, and gets them ready to be adopted. And Ginger, I'm looking at a page on your website, and I want to read this for the listening audience and get your response here, because it's really great. And on gingersparents.org, listening audience, I'm looking at her page where she kind of describes, you know, how they do everything in their rescue. And it says, "Our rescue specializes in behavioral rehabilitation of relinquished birds and those in need of rescue from difficult situations. The individual care for each bird includes proper diet, socialization, and training. Behavioral issues such as screaming, plucking, and biting are reduced or eliminated. Individual taming and training is completed with each bird to build a solid bird-human relationship. In order to provide the highest level of care, we only accept a limited number of parrots and likewise have a stringent screening process for placing parrots." And Ginger, what I wanted to ask you about out of all this is, evidently you're skilled in behavior training, and is this how you reduce screaming, plucking, and biting? Because that's a big issue in the aviculture community. You know, lots of birds are biting and screaming and plucking themselves bald. And what's your response to this?
Okay, so here's my response to that. And the plucking issue is a little bit different. We'll save that one for last. But the screaming issue, I have solved that with every bird that's come in here as a screamer. And I hope that it would follow them to the next home. And it's really going to be dependent upon that new owner following what I have decided was the issue and how to resolve it. So for here, I'm going to give you an example. I had a bird come in that was screaming constantly. And that's what he did. First of all, it was clipped, so that's how he got your attention. He couldn't come to you. He screamed. So he would sit on his play stand and just scream. Well, he knew one word. I don't know why he knew this word, but he knows the word squeak. But he says it in a really funny voice. He goes, squeak, real high pitch. Kind of annoying, but way better than listening to scream. So what I did with him is every single time for a week straight it was, that he would say the word squeak, I would repeat that in the same tone and run over to him and give him a head scratch. So he'd sit there and scream and scream and scream, and once in a while he'd throw in that squeak. I'd run up and go, good bird, and scratch his head, and go back and sit down or do whatever else I was doing, dishes or cooking dinner, whatever I was doing at the time. It took about a week of listening to that screaming to the point where it started to get reduced and reduced more and more, and that bird stopped screaming after, I would say, about 30 days. It was gone completely. Think, no more screaming. He never screamed. He still, to this day, though, will say squeak. And I respond back to him every time. I'll just respond back. Squeak. Makes him happy. He just, for whatever reason, that's what it was that he wanted attention. The attention for that bird. And that's why I go into it where you, what you read says individualized.
Mm-hmm.
It's individualized. Totally individualized. Because I have other birds that scream for other reasons. Mm-hmm. Not always attention. So you have to look at each bird as an individual case, and that's why I can't say that I will reduce your bird screaming if you called me for advice, for example, because I don't know why it's screaming. I'd have to see it. I'd have to go there. I can give you examples of how I've curbed it for birds in my care, but I'm not going to be able to guarantee you that that's going to work for you. But it's working for me because I have that bird 24/7 with me for a while. Once he leaves here, he's going to carry that with him because I'm going to give that next owner the ability to say, listen, if he starts screaming again for any reason, he ever does, I don't know if he will, just ignore it until he says the word squeak, and then I'll tell you what I did, and it'll work. And I'm sure it will, because it's worked with other birds who have come and gone since that bird. So that's,
I think a lot of cockatoo owners will enjoy this. Or Moluccans.
It's really, yeah, and Moluccans, I don't know a lot about. I mean, I know a lot about their screaming.
Right.
I did have a bear. I had a bear-eyed cockatoo that used to scream all the time, and it also knew how to say a few words. And one of the phrases that she said all the time was, "Want to play?" And like a little kid's voice, "Want to play? Want to play?" And that, I did the same thing with that. So when he'd say, "Want to play?" I'd go, "Want to play?" And I'd go over and scratch his head, or, you know, give him a toy, because he was big into foot toys, that bird. And he just wanted to say, you know, basically, he's like, "Hey, remember me?" You know, that's really what it's about. Because the birds, especially cockatoos and your other birds that are flock-oriented, they really want to know all about, they want to be involved in everything.
So you gave the bird attention by using a word it was familiar with already.
Yes. So we talk back and forth using their communication skills. If the bird screams and we scream back at them, they're going, cool, screaming's what it's all about.
Mimicking.
So right.
You scream, I can scream too.
That's right. So I have, you know, found that that's what we do. We, to get a behavior to become extinct, you have to replace it with something else. You can't just expect that behavior to go away. You have to replace it. So let's replace it with something good. We know what you want. You want attention. Well, you know how to say this word. I like that word way better than screaming, so I'm going to replace it with that word. So every time you say that word, I'm going to repeat it, and I'm going to come over and give you something. Attention, a treat, whatever, a foot toy. So again, you know, it's an individualized thing. I cannot say straight across the board that this is going to work for a Moluccan rather that has been screaming for 25 years. It probably would in some way, shape, or form, but I'd have to know the bird and know what the motivation behind it and why he's doing it and what he's wanting.
So studying more positive reinforcement training from a variety of teachers and trainers might help these people that are they're having these problems.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Seek out training. And by really good trainers, that's the key too. There are a lot of people out there who say they are bird behaviorists. What you want to do is make sure you get your training from the top of the line, people who really do this for a living, who have had training themselves and understand it, and who own the bird. There are a lot of people who are trainers, but they don't have a bird in their house. They don't really understand what it's like 24/7. And I feel you do need to do that. You have to understand it. So the bird trainers I rely on are many. I have one in particular that I absolutely have recently, within the past 2 years, fallen in love with too. And her name is Lara Joseph. And she is from the Animal Behavior Center. And a fantastic trainer. Fantastic. And she's going all over the country and has all kinds of seminars and has a wonderful big facility and is fantastic at what she does. So there are many others. There's another one, like I've mentioned before, Michael Spazin, parrot wizard, who does wonderful work and absolutely great with training methods, with a full behavior, a full companion parrot structure. That's what I like about him too. He does the full boat. You know, it's like what you do with a bird to make him happy completely, a well-rounded, well-behaved parrot. He actually wrote a book about it. So there are so many different people out there that are good resources to rely on that are experienced bird trainers, and that's where I tell people to go. You know, don't just look on the internet for some guy on YouTube who got their parrot to
right.
Stop, you know, doing something.
Right.
And going back to what you said, you know, about the different issues that I had said on my website here about the biting.
Mm-hmm.
Biting, what I use for biting is real easy. Don't put your hand on the bird. You know, so you use the rope ring. Why?
That's simple.
Why, if you
right.
It's very simple. I don't get this because I respect the bird enough to say, listen, like I said to you earlier, okay, you don't want to come out of your cage? Fine, you don't have to come out today. That's cool. I'm good with that. I'm not going to force you to come out, you know? And if you need to go back once you are out, and I'm thinking, it looks like you're kind of going to get upset if I make you go in, or I know you're going to bite me because that's just your habit, I'm going to make you step up on the rope ring, and I'm going to make it fun. Okay, you're going in your cage. Let's go. Here's your Nutriberry that you only get one time when you go back in your cage.
And because many of them are like five-year-olds, right? So you got to make it fun.
Everything has to be about fun. Everything should be exciting. And when you put in anger, because that's just what we all go to. We get frustrated and we get angry. Like, bird bit me. Oh, why is he always biting me? I hate it. And so then they go, don't bite. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. That's not helping. They don't understand it. They just understand your stuff. But they don't know why. So, and they don't really understand what that's all about anyway. So it's much easier to make things fun and make it exciting and make it something they look forward to. And if they look forward to the rope ring transport ride, or like you said, to the bus, I used to call it the rope taxi. You know, rope taxis here. They jump on and they're like, great, where are we going? Let's go get something. So that's how I do the biting thing. I reduce the biting or eliminate it completely by using that. I don't give them an opportunity to bite. The best way to put it.
You're not forcing the issue, right?
I don't.
You're not
going to
keep reaching for them if they're biting, pushing.
Yes. So I respect them for who they are and what they are, a wild animal. I give them a way to communicate with me, positive reinforcement. And I give them things they can rely on and count on through trust. And the trust works both ways. I have to trust them and they have to trust me. And it's really very simple.
And
but a lot
what about
of times
plucking?
People, now, the plucking issue is a little different. The plucking can come from a variety of reasons. The hardest thing about plucking is once it becomes a habit, it is almost impossible to break. Plucking, I've only had a couple birds where I've had great success with them not plucking. And that's once I find out what the issue is. My first thing with every plucker that walks in the door here is they go and get a complete vet check, including a blood workup, which I do for all the birds anyway, fecal tests and all of that. And then I have the vet really check them over for the skin, especially on pluckers. The birds that I have here, all the pluckers that I've had here do not have any kind of physical reason for plucking. So theirs is all emotional or behavioral. And those are the ones that are almost impossible to stop. I had the one that did stop was Kenny. Kenny, I had him on a medication because he was having anxiety attacks as well, where he would just throw himself against the cage bars and he was deathly afraid of everything. It was horrible. It was a panic attack. And he was plucking, and we found out later it probably was attributed to the clipping that he had and scraping on his body. He probably had never been clipped in his life. So those were the two things that probably attributed to that. A bad clip will cause plucking. There's medications you can use to get them through it while you're training, and that was what I did with Kenny. He was on a medication to calm him down. But I also used that time to train him. It wasn't like everything stopped, and I wasn't looking for a one-size-fits-all or an answer to the problem. Here, take this medicine, and it fixes it. I was like, okay, we've got to find out why is this bird plucking and work with it so we can figure out how to stop it if possible. So put him on the medication, work with him, and train him. We took him off the medication, and he's never, ever plucked again.
Mm.
Okay, so mm-hmm. Now with Kenny. Kenny's was probably irritation from the wings. And now he's got other things to do that he learned. He learned through training. He learned how to play with toys. He learned how to do clicker training. Back then I was doing target training and clicker training using a target stick and a clicker. He learned how to do that. He learned how to do a lot of things and I kept him active all the time. And so he didn't care about fluffing anymore. It just didn't happen. And his wings grew out and he flew. And that gave him more confidence, which I find a lot of times too. And unfortunately, with pluckers, many of the pluckers don't have wings anymore because they pluck those too.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't fly, so therefore their confidence level doesn't have that extra boost.
Mm-hmm. I understand plucking is an addiction where they get some kind of like jolt out of pulling a feather out of their skin, so they keep doing it to get that, you know, that feeling, that jolt, that rise, you know, kind of like doing drugs maybe or something.
So
I read that somewhere.
Kinds of plucking. Yeah, it's an endorphin release, actually. It's like people, there are some humans that cut themselves with razor blades and things. It's the same kind
of, you gotta
of
get
a
rise, get that,
get
the adrenaline going or something.
So here's the thing too about plucking is there are different kinds of plucking. As you described, there's a plucking where they pull it directly right out of the follicle. And that is gonna give them that endorphin rush. That's gonna do it because it's pulling that out, that hurts. There is another kind, and it's called barbering, which is where they take the feather, and the feather still stays in the body, in the follicle, but they take the barbs off, the actual pieces, and they chew it, and then they're sniffing.
While they're preening. While they're preening, right?
Right, right. And I have my African gray is a snipper, and a snipper means he goes down and he just snips the feathers off, but he leaves the after feather, so let's talk about what that means. A feather consists of the feather itself and a little puffy part at the end. That's called the after feather. My African gray takes and plucks, he doesn't pluck, sorry, he snips off with his beak the feather at the shaft and leaves the after feather in just one area on his body. So he looks all fuzzy, like a fluffy little chicken, you know, baby chicken. That's his
And
form
some
of
them eat the feathers. Someone a long time ago told me that if they're eating the feathers, if they're plucking and eating them, or maybe even chewing on them, it's because of a nutritional deficiency. And the what you're talking about, barbering, I've read in a few places that may be because of stress.
And this is, again, where, you know, going back to what I said earlier, it's essential for any bird who plucks or destroys their feather. I call it feather destructive behavior because that's really what it is. It's feather destructive behavior. Why is that happening? Your avian vet has to help you determine if there is a physical reason for it. If there is not, then there's a behavioral issue. It could be stress-related. It could be emotionally. Maybe they are lacking something else within their environment. There's a lot going on there. So it's really essential to have your vet involved in this, in a plucking bird. You can't just attribute it to, he's a plucker.
Right, you know? So you can rule out the physical...
Yeah. Yeah.
The potential physical issue that there may be...
Right.
Maybe they have a kidney or liver disease or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about that in another show with, I think Buddy Wasky was talking about that. You know, if they pluck on one side of their body, it might be their kidney, or other side, the liver, in the back. Maybe they have a lung, a respiratory issue or something like that. And so if one of their organs are, you know, not doing well, they might pull the feathers out around that organ.
And that's so critical for people to understand, because a lot of birds who have digestive issues with their crop, or maybe who have PCV or who have, PDD, or who have avian borne virus and have digestive issues, they're going to pluck around the chest area where their crop is and maybe down into the abdomen a little bit. That's what's going on. It's an internal thing, and that's irritating. And the only thing,
plucking around a breast, you know, and the crop. Yeah.
Yep.
Because it's, they're getting
critical.
Yeah, because they're feeling it.
Yeah.
They're going to really feel and get some response from their digestive tract that they're going to really notice.
So my whole thing, I tell everybody this about everything. Get your bird in and have him vet checked. And I don't mean just have the vet look at him with an exam. Do your blood work up, do a fecal and go from there. Sit down with your vet and really understand what's happening and make sure it's an avian vet and not just a dog cat vet that sees birds. It has to be somebody who understands the avian.
That's more acquainted with ornithology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Critical.
When you're, Yvonne Patterson mentioned this too in a show I had with her not long ago, that we should get a blood workup immediately upon receiving any bird, so that later down the road, if there's a problem or you think there's a problem, they can take another blood sample and compare the two. Would you agree that that's a good process?
Absolutely, and here's why. What we do is exactly what you just described. It's called a baseline. So I get the snapshot of what that bird looks like today. And then if something happens to him next week, next month, 2 years from now, I take another blood work test. We put them side by side. I can say, wow, you know, his CPK levels were pretty high back then, and they're still high today. So that's not significant. If I didn't have that baseline to look at when the bird was healthy, now the bird's sick, I'd see what I might consider high CPK levels and go, oh my gosh, this bird's got a high CPK, when in fact, it may be normal for that bird.
Exactly.
Really important to get a baseline, because you otherwise do not know what you're looking at.
And maybe, is it even more helpful if you have more than one bird, and especially if you have a large flock where, like, you know, you start with one bird, then you bring in another one and another one.
Yes.
Maybe even over time, if you don't have the baseline blood sample and you bring in a second bird, and that bird has some illness or disease and pass it on to your bird, would it be more difficult to figure it out?
Not necessarily. It would really depend on what kind of testing was done on the blood. The kind of baseline blood test that I'm referring to is more of a CBC and a chemistry panel. So it looks at things like liver function and, you know, those kinds of CPK would be the muscle issues and things like that. But for a disease, depending on whether or not that blood was tested for disease, it really wouldn't be very vital for that.
I hear you. I try to think of everything that the listening audience might be thinking about.
Right. The things that you want to test for when you get a new bird, if you have other birds already and you get a new bird, you always want to do a baseline, of course. You always want to quarantine, and that's where it gets really hard for some people who don't have the ability to quarantine birds, because 30 days quarantine is pretty much what's going to be recommended. No shared air space during that time, well, that's almost impossible for the normal bird owner to have, you know. Here I have that. I'm actually at the new facility we're building now. I'm making a quarantine room, which will have a complete own entrance and everything. We're doing it the right way there. I don't have that ability here. Here I have a quarantine area, which does have its own air handling space, but does not have an outside entrance. So my next facility that I'm building now will. So that'll be ready this fall, early winter. When we move into that, we'll have that. But, you know, the normal bird owner or pet owner doesn't have the capability of having that. And so they may try to keep a bird when they're doing quarantine, one in a bedroom and one in the family room. And that's the best they can do. That's okay. That's better than nothing.
Different room, right? Not the same airspace. Yeah. A lot of the illness and disease are airborne, right?
And that's the problem. So, and a lot of times you can transfer that on your hands, on your shoes, on, you know, and my vet has even told me again recently that, you know, if you have an area outside, you're feeding your wild birds outside, and especially a lot of dove population, they carry chlamydia. And now you're walking around out there and maybe in the grass and you're picking up poop on the bottom of your shoes and you walk in your house, you just brought chlamydia into your house.
Mm-hmm. Same disease.
Right. Right.
Between different animals.
It's going to go right there and now it's on your shoes and now your little bird goes on the floor and he's walking around and steps on the floor and he picks his foot up and licks it for whatever reason, or he grooms himself with that foot and spreads it on his feathers, or... You know,
or
I mean,
if you visit someone else's aviary, and not criticizing zoos because some of our sponsors are zoos. But if you go to a zoo where there's a variety of different animals and especially a lot of birds, you could track some of the bacteria and disease in from those facilities on your feet, couldn't you?
Yes, and the other thing is that people need to think about that when they go to bird shows or bird stores or any of those things. And I'm not saying don't visit those or patronize those. Of course go. Of course do those things. Just use common sense when you come home. You know, that's all. So
right, and you could even take your bird's disease to someone else's aviary, yes. Mostly from your feet. Wouldn't that be?
Absolutely.
We wash our hands a lot. People usually wash their hands constantly.
Right.
But I think Yvonne Peschen and I talked about that a lot in the last show and years ago when I first met her. I was talking to her about opening a big aviary here in Kansas City so that it would be like a public attraction where, you know, kids could come and learn about parrots and pet birds and all that, and I asked her, you know, would you bring your birds there and teach? And she said no. And I said, why not? And she said, because I don't want, you know, my birds to be in a public place where they might get diseases, because that would be a situation where her birds would be there and the public would be coming in and out, and they have birds too. Some of them, so the stuff would be getting tracked into the aviary from their feet, and I talked about, well, couldn't we have a foot bath, you know, where they could disinfect their feet? And she said, yeah, you could, but I'm not bringing my birds there because I've had them for 40 years and I'm not going to risk it. I don't want to risk,
right?
And because she's so close to them, because there's so much, you know, like our family and our kids, and so we kind of squash that idea.
And here's the thing, you know, the foot baths are important. We are putting those in at the new facility. We learned that from my avian vet, and also the Oasis does that. Very critical to have. However, we do not any longer attend with our birds or go to any of the bird marts, and it's not because we don't want to patronize them. It's not because we don't want to, say they're bad. It's just that you don't know what's happening there. You know, you don't
know. You don't know what kind of control they have, and there probably isn't any. Yeah.
Right. Right. And who's to say my bird that I bring there doesn't have something that is harboring, that is not being shed as a virus currently, is not something that would even be picked up on any testing, didn't give it to somebody else.
So, well, I just thought of a new business. I'm thinking about going into the aviary disinfectant business. Well, I mean, wouldn't it be cool if there was a system? Because, you know, everywhere when you go to restaurants, they all have these little boxes all around the facilities for rodents. And because it's a problem, and it's a problem that has to be dealt with. But wouldn't it be cool if somebody went into the business of developing some kind of a simple, affordable disinfectant system that would maybe, you know, help those of us that want to move our birds around, take them to bird shows, bird fairs. There's a lot of bird fairs, and we really enjoy those. But you could, you could get a problem. Could have a problem taking your birds there or coming home. Just be sure and disinfect your feet, listening audience.
Absolutely.
When you go to bird fairs, go to pet stores, anywhere where there's animals.
Yep.
You want to disinfect your feet before you walk into the room where your birds are, right?
And that's what we do. What we actually do is, you may think this is an extreme, but when you have the amount of birds that I do it this way. And that's what I would do this, even if I had probably two birds, now that I know everything I do, or even one bird. But I have another pair of shoes that I just leave outside. So when it's time for me to go to a place that there are other birds, if I give a talk somewhere at a bird club, or if I'm going to be presenting something at a bird show, what I will do is use different shoes, and then I will not use those shoes in the house, period.
Shoes that haven't been in your aviary or in your bird
correct.
Space.
Correct. So my bird space, yeah. So we have shoes that are only worn here, and we have shoes that are only worn outside, and that's it.
Nice.
It's just safer. It's safer because, you know, there's too
that's
much when you're going into a large group, and this is a large group of birds here. So if I have somebody come here and they have a bird at home, I tell them, you know, when you go home, get some baby wipes out or something, wipe the bottom of your feet, make sure you're going to clean your, you know, wash your hands before you touch your bird. I'm not telling you my birds are sick because they're not, but they may have something that I don't know that they have.
Right, because you can't do blood work every day.
No.
And a lot of this is airborne. You could open a window and something could come in your house, right? Or your aviary.
They could get it from walking across my sidewalk where the doves are pooping all day long. Because, you know, they eat the bird seed, I feed them.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to really think outside the box. And my avian vet is the one that taught me this. And important, you know, to have an avian vet on your side is important anyway. And I tell everyone, get an avian vet when your bird is not sick, because when he is sick, you want to know him already. You want your bird to know the bird, the avian vet, and you want the avian vet to know you.
Right.
So you're not
so get
calling in an emergency.
Baseline blood work done immediately.
Established.
Right
and establish a relationship.
Then you know if there is something existing, and then it can be compared to blood works later to see if something has changed, right?
Right, right. And we don't do blood work every year. We don't do health checkups every year unless we feel it's warranted. So if I get a lot of birds that come in and they go into a bird room, then I'll probably do one a year. But every other year for sure.
And
that's because of the amount of
you're controlling the environment more too.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And lots of disinfecting and cleaning and keeping your, you know, two pairs of shoes, one for indoors, one for outdoors. Listening audience, I'm talking to Ginger with Ginger's Bird Rescue or Parrot Rescue on Facebook. It's Ginger's Parrot Rescue. Her website is gingersparrotrescue.org. We're about to wind this up, and you, the bird keeper, and people thinking about having a bird can join us online to listen to all of this conversation I've been having with Ginger tonight. Highly educated bird trainer and bird keeper, aviculturist, and been running. How long have you been running your rescue there in Arizona?
I've been doing rescue work for a long time, but I actually started the business 11 years ago. Made it formal.
Nice. And how long since you completed your behavioral training education?
I never stop. So I just continue. Yeah, I
that's
do.
A good
I
answer.
Continue.
I like that. Yeah. I like that answer. Right.
I just go in constantly and update. So all of the
it never
places
ends,
that I have been.
So.
Yeah, and you can. What's really nice about the AFA courses is that you can go back in later and review them at any time you want. And that's what I do occasionally. I'll be like, you know what, I probably haven't reviewed this in a while. Let's just go back and take a look.
Because
there's
they update those courses with as they gather new information. And listening eyes, Ginger is a staff member with Oasis Sanctuary Arizona, a Humane Society of Arizona partner, AFA certified aviculturist levels 1 and 2. That's American Federation of Aviculture. 2012 graduate of Susan Friedman Behavior Works Program.
Are you searching for the healthiest, most wholesome food for your parrots? Then you've got to take a look at Topps Parrot Food. Topps has been around since 2003 and is now USDA organic certified. Topps is the only parrot food company that can use the USDA organic mark and does not use any fillers like peanuts, corn, or soy or artificial flavors or colors. The food is all natural, non-GMO, and made with all organic ingredients to keep your birds happy and healthy. We all want that. Tops is also made right here in the United States. So stop feeding your parrots sugar, artificial colors, and fillers like peanuts. Switch to Tops Parrot Food, USDA organic certified, non-GMO, and made in the U.S. Visit www.topsparrotfood.com to order the best organic pellets, seed mixes, and treats. And here's an added bonus for you. Use code BTR18 at checkout to save $5 on your next order. That's BTR, like Bird Talk Radio, 18 to save $5. Tops Parrot Food. TOPS parrotfood.com. USDA organic, and the birds love it.